Swinging a high drive into center field. Hits at the wall. It is gone! Cassis does it again.
Again.
It's gone! It's into the bullpen! This game is tied! This game is tied!
He swings and rips one to center field. It's high, it's deep, it's back, it's gone! Sale winds, he fires. Swing and a miss, Frank Lee, it's over!
All right, welcome back to Play Tessie. It is episode 249. This is the official Red Sox podcast of WEEI. Before we get going, hit that subscribe button wherever you get your podcasts, rate 5 stars, and find us on the YouTube page, on WEEI's YouTube page. You can subscribe to WEEI there. You can find the Play Tessie playlist there. Hit the thumbs up on all the videos. We really appreciate it. And then find us on the socials at Play Tessie on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Just Gordo and Sammy today, and Sammy looks like you look really different. I don't want to say you look emo because I don't think it's emo. You've got something going on in the front.
I've been on the water on a pontoon boat. I'm out here in rural Wisconsin. Been on the boat. My hair's a little bit of a mess. I've been listening to the Red Sox game. Got back inside, showered. Now I'm here. That's why the hair is a little bit crazy, but I don't think you're wrong if you say it's a bit of an emo look.
Wisconsin changes a man. That's the truth. But yeah, man, this series, Sox dropped 2 out of 3 after a first game where you felt like, oh my God, like the Red Sox are facing a red hot Padres team and they just went in and steamrolled their asses, win 10-2, and you feel really good about it. But you lose the next two. It's like the Sox won the first one easily. They lost the third one handily. And then the series is going to be defined, in my opinion, by that middle game and everything that went down there. Because that was a game they could have, and to be honest with you, probably should have won, not even let it get to extra innings. And we'll get into that. But yeah, one obvious win, one obvious loss. And then, you know, two good teams going at it. A series is going to be defined by the game that both teams can win. And the Padres got that game, so the Sox lose 2 out of 3. But yeah, I came away from the series really impressed with this Padres team. They're deep in every sense of the word. Like, their lineup is basically 1 through 8 quality hitters. They're not going to hit a ton of home runs, but it is quality guys 1 through 8, and their 9 hitter is a good defensive catcher that they targeted specifically to help with the pitching staff. Their rotation, they threw 3, and I know Michael King, like, he wasn't ready to come back. I don't know why they did that. They won the game anyway, but they threw 3 really good starting pitchers at the Red Sox, and the bullpen is just, it is one of the best I've ever seen. The guy who came in at the end of the third game, Morgan, I had never heard of that guy. And he comes in and he has a 1.80 ERA, and he's like their 7th reliever. Like, yeah, that team, to be honest with you, like we have recently watched the Red Sox play the Dodgers, the Cubs, the Phillies, and now this Padres team. I genuinely feel like the Padres are the best out of that bunch. That's how I came away from this one.
I think I'd still lean Phillies just because their lineup and rotation, I think, are both better than the Padres. But if you're talking just bullpen, that was, I mean, you may never see a bullpen like that. Or maybe not never, but you're not going to see a bullpen like that very often. So Mason Miller, Robert Suarez, Adrian Morejon, Jason Adam. It's just absurd. Like everyone who came out of that bullpen, and I'm with you, Gordo. Morgan, I'm like, who's this guy? He's got a sub-2 ERA, and he's dicing the Red Sox up too.
Estrada in game 2 was crazy.
Estrada has the chitter, right? The change-up splitter. He calls it a chitter.
Is that what he's calling it?
Yeah, he calls it a chitter.
He had a couple of things. He just looked great for 2 innings, but yeah, like Wandy Peralta was like one of the Yankees' better relievers a couple of years ago, and he's coming in the third inning to eat 2 innings. And like Yuki Matsui, they paid a couple of years ago, and he's like their mop-up guy.
Oh, like, Gordo.
It's crazy.
Yuki Matsui wearing number 1 as a pitcher. Do you know how angry that made me? The aesthetic also,
I feel like you got to be, he's not skinny.
Like, you got to be the smallest pitcher of all time for one to look good on the back of a pitcher. But that's not what people are tuning in for. This is my weird, weird number focus brain. Again, this bullpen, it's got to be the best in Major League Baseball. I think by a pretty good margin, too. I don't think there's a close second. I'm racking my brain right now.
I want to shit talk the Yankees bullpen right now, but I feel like I can't off of two losses. Yeah. But I want to. Just know that that thought has crept into my mind.
That's where I was going. On paper, the Yankees bullpen, you could conceivably say Devin Williams, he's a former All-Star, David Bednar, Bird, Duvall, but no. Weaver. Come on, man. We've seen them struggle quite a Weaver. Excuse me. I forgot Luke Weaver. That was their big 2024 breakout guy. But no, the Padres by a good amount. Seattle, good too. Red Sox, good bullpen. But none of those teams touch what the Padres were running out there. That was brutal.
I mean, it was unbelievable. And we'll talk about the games. I feel like out of all of the series this year, we haven't been doing a lot of game by game this year. We've been doing a lot more storylines on Playtest here this year. But I feel like this series may call for a game by game discussion. But to jump to game two really quick, it's like Michael King, they did a great – they didn't score. That second inning really killed them where they left the bases loaded. They had bases loaded, one out, and didn't score a run there. Like, that killed them. But at the same time, it drove up King's pitch count. He comes out of the game with no outs in the third and a man on second. And against most teams, yeah, you're going to be facing some pretty bum-ass relievers if you get the starter out after two innings. But against this Padres team, they were able to eat not just 3 through 9, but the 10th inning. Like, they still had Jason Adam for the 10th. Like, yeah, it is a differently built bullpen. But should we start in game one? Legit, we have not really done this year, but I feel like this series might be the time to call for it.
We can do it. I'm down.
So game one, I feel like, was a story of the starting pitchers, because you go in and it's Buehler, who is coming off a terrible start against Houston, and Nick Pivetta, who's just had this awesome season. And you know, the first couple innings, it's like, okay, you feel pretty good about what Buehler's doing, but they're not really touching Pivetta. And then they just eat Nick Pivetta's ass for lunch. Like, they literally just got up there. And yeah, he threw the pickoff away and let up a nuke to Willie. But here's a question I have for you. Buehler, yeah, they ate Nick Pivetta's ass.
Sorry,
they did.
You caught me off guard with that one.
They ate it, dude. But Buehler, it looked like Philly's Buehler. Like, it wasn't. He's had a couple of starts. Like, Loomer on the broadcast was referencing, oh, for like his last, you know, six starts, his ERA is like in the threes. And it's like, yeah, but he's gotten very lucky to get it to that point. There was one good start in there. This was another one, though. So now it's two out of his last four starts have been good. And my question for you, and by the way, this is amid reports from Chris Cotillo that his rotation spot was in jeopardy and potentially his roster spot. And this wasn't part of the report, but to me, I'm sure that has a lot to do with the fact that starting with his start in this series, he earns $500K every other start he makes until start 28. So there's $2 million on the line here for the Red Sox to be paying or not paying Walker Buehler. So I'm sure if he stunk up the joint again, there would have been a discussion of how much longer is this leash? Are we really going to let him make two more starts and earn another $500,000? Or do we give a guy like Kyle Harrison a shot at it? But Buehler certainly earned another start. My question for you, Sammy, is how good do you feel? Like, first, like Buehler and Dustin May, those guys are right now your 4 and 5. Who do you have more confidence in right now as the number four, as the guy who you think is going to be, if the Red Sox make the postseason, starting that fourth game, I guess if they make the division series?
Yeah, Buehler for sure. And I'm not saying Buehler has been good this year. I think everybody listening knows that he has been not good this year. I have been very patient with him, probably too patient. I think that his track record is what makes me feel a little bit more confident with him. Dustin May is really just a roll of the dice. There's no way to predict what he's going to look like. Past performance doesn't help you very much. What you saw in his first start with the Red Sox, that doesn't really help you very much. You're really just guessing almost blindly with Dustin May. With Walker Buehler, I can point to a history of success. I can point to last year in the playoffs, he pitched well. And I can point to a handful, just a handful of recent starts where he has been good. Not great, but good. So if we're picking between two not so great options, I would go Buehler. And one thing I'd like to point out about the start, his most recent start against the Padres, going from the stretch.
Exclusively.
I don't know who asked him to do that, whether it was his choice, Brian Bayo's suggestion, who did the same thing, Andrew Bailey, Alex Cora, whoever. It was a noticeable difference, though. That's the only reason I feel a little bit better after seeing that start. Of course, and of course, the numbers were good too. That helps a bit. So, yeah, I'll take Bueller over May, but neither is a fantastic choice as we record here in early August.
Yeah, see, that's the thing is you got to look at things like to tangibly point to it, because like anyone can, like Austin Gomber on the Rockies has had like good starts before. Like anyone can have like a 6-inning, 1-run start now and then. But like when Bueller pitched well against the Phillies, he came out in the media that night and said, oh, I went to this pitching lab over the All-Star break, and that's why I feel like I pitch better. And it's like everyone latched onto that. It's like, okay, maybe he's going to be better. Turns out that wasn't the case. Now it's pitching from the stretch. And if he pitches well again, I'm sure he's going to do it again. And if he pitches well again, then it's like, okay, could this be the thing that helped him figure it out? With Dustin May, when you're looking at him, it's, well, the Red Sox gave up a first-round pick from last year, a guy that made that they literally just traded for in a Rafael Devers package to get him, right? So clearly they see something they like, and they were working with his pitch mix. They changed it up, and they thrown a bunch of cutters. I get it. Clearly there's something they like with him. So we're kind of grasping at straws here. We're like begging for anything. And then obviously the other options, Kyle Harrison, Richard Fitz, Cooper Criswell. I want to see Harrison get a shot. And we can talk about what Lucas Giolito did in the second game. I know he doesn't like getting extra rest, extra days off. I know he's talked about how he didn't like the All-Star break. And obviously he's going to want to hit that innings marker, 140 innings, and having a start push back could be the difference between getting there and not getting there for him. It really is going to be that close. But would I be upset if they pushed him back or maybe even skipped a start and gave like Kyle Harrison a chance? Not just to see what Kyle Harrison has, but I just, with Giolito's velocity a little bit down, is about a mile an hour down on the fastball during his start in game two. And obviously he lost his mechanics. I don't attribute that. Like, I think he just lost it, and he thinks he could have fixed it in the middle of the start. But I do think that they should give some of these other guys a chance, namely Harrison and maybe Criswell too, because he pitched well against Houston. But give a couple of other guys a chance just to see where you can find lightning in a bottle for the number 4 and 5 guy, just in case Bueller and May are what they've been for most of the year, as opposed to what they think May could be and what Bueller was in his last start.
I get what you're saying about Giolito. The velocity drop, it was noticeable, but then again, his previous start, he did the same thing and went 8 innings. You're right. He is a guy who hates not being on 5 days rest. He's a big routine guy. That said, give him an extra day. I don't hate it. He might hate it, but I don't hate it. I also think people are a little quick to write off Richard Fitz. I don't expect the world from him. And I know you didn't forget to mention him. You mentioned him, but in general, he was a guy who had so much success when he came up. Weird injury thing happened with the pec, came back way too early. That was a mistake by the Red Sox, and then hasn't looked the same since. I could totally see him bouncing back, but then again, would I feel good about him starting game 4 of a playoff series? Not really. So the state of the Red Sox rotation right now is very strange. Like, you feel great about Crochet, of course. Giolito, kind of up and down, more good than bad. Bayo, more good than bad as well. But then after that, it's just a mixed bag of question marks. And I don't want to keep beating a dead horse, but how do you not upgrade at the deadline? We knew we were going to have this conversation. So what can I even say?
With Giolito and Bayo, like those guys up until this series have been so, so, so good. But let this series be a little bit of a sneak peek into what our world could look like if either of those guys either gets hurt or is ineffective down the stretch. And like, I know that people are always going to be worried about Bayo as a young. I'm not really worried about Bayo falling off towards the end. It's just not really something he's done in his career, and he's built up and up and up and has been able to handle it. Giolito, obviously coming off surgery, he's been a horse in the past, so it's not an ability thing. He has done the innings thing, like been there, done that. But he had the internal brace procedure. This is his first season coming off of that. So it is a little bit nerve-wracking. He had 6 walks, 1 strikeout. Obviously, again, like, we can talk about the decision to leave him in that game for as long as they did, which I thought was crazy. They just didn't have anyone up and warming for the Ryan O'Hearn at bat. They could have put in a lefty there, and maybe they would have pinch hit for O'Hearn, maybe not, but Giolito all night had it. It looked like, I mean, he was battling, and to his credit, for the most part, up until that fifth inning, like, the results were there. He was getting out of innings, but clearly he was hanging on by a thread, and that would have been a good time with two outs there to go to a reliever. They didn't do it. Six walks. He ended up walking four in a row in that spot before they got him out of there. But I don't think, like, I'm not sitting here telling you I think Giolito is going to do that when he comes out and faces the Marlins, I believe, on Friday. But, and this isn't even me, like, wanting them to have that. Like, obviously, I would love for them to have a free $14 million option on the guy for next year. But it's more so me wanting to do everything possible to make sure that that guy is the version that we've seen for the last few months in the postseason. Because if he's not, like, they're not going to go anywhere. Like,
you need
Giolito
him.
And Bayo and Crochet are the Bradford said it on the radio. They're the three most important players on this team right now. You lose one of those guys, or if one of those guys loses their effectiveness, this is a completely different team. And you saw it this weekend.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you. And that's why I think it's at least worth considering giving Giolito an extra day. Would it help him? Who knows?
Yeah,
but you
got to
try stuff at this time of the year. And I think also, I thought Bayo was fine
on
Sunday. He was better than his stat line would indicate. This is still the best he's pitched. I feel really good about him. I don't know if he's going to take another step in 2025. I wouldn't expect it, and I wouldn't fault him for not taking another step, but he's a guy that I feel at least decent about every time he's on the mound. So, and I agree with what Bradfoe said. If you lose Giolito, Bayo, Crochet is a no-brainer. You're done without him. But those other two guys, the options, the other options, yeah, they have upside, but upside, you don't want upside in September, October. You want to know what you're getting. So, tough spot for the Red Sox. And this, again, won't beat a dead horse. This is what we spoke about for weeks. Me, you, Pat, and Joe, we all said, need a starting pitcher. They get Dustin May. Like,
didn't Charlie Morton strike out like seven guys in a row?
Oh, he was great. Two starts in a row. He's been great for the Tigers. That's the guy I didn't want initially. And now I'm talking about him like, oh, you could have had 41-year-old Charlie Morton. Oy.
With Bayo, he's walked guys all year, and he's been good enough to get through those starts, and like, and honestly, even when he was really not looking good in his first maybe six or seven, maybe even more starts, I'd have to go look back. It was a while, but he was keeping runs off the board. Even in his good starts for the last several months, like he's been walking guys, and today it was kind of the, here's what happens if it doesn't go his way. Because he walked three, got ding-ding-dunked around a little bit, but he didn't look any different than he's looked. In fact, I'd argue he may have even looked better than some of his good starts. The changeup before he let up the two runs on the Arias double, he had a couple of changeups there where it was like, holy shit, like that's what it was before. So there is reason to believe that, like, yeah, Bayo, yeah, he's fine. I'm unbothered by that. The reason I suggest the pushing the Giolito thing back, in addition to potentially saving him a little bit, is they got to find a way to give a couple of guys a chance at being that lightning in a bottle. Because, yeah, you got two shots at it with May and with Buehler. Give yourself four or five. Like you mentioned Fitz. I'll mention Kyle Harrison. A lot of people calling into the radio really wanted Criswell. I think we've seen Criswell before, and like we know where that's going to go. 89 on the fastball, I'm not sure. But like Kyle Harrison has looked a lot better. Richard Fitz has good strikeout numbers. It hasn't been the same since the injury. He struck out, I forget, he only went like four innings in AAA on Saturday, but he struck out like eight. So he's a guy that's going to help the team. It's just going to be a matter of what role is it going to be in.
Gordo, I got one for you. What's your leash look like on Dustin May? Because this is a guy we've seen have success in the past, like I said earlier, but he hasn't been good in 2025, and you got no commitment to him either. He's a free agent in a month and a half. So if let's hope this doesn't happen, but let's say he goes four innings, gives up four runs, walks three guys, three strikeouts, just doesn't, not inspiring in his next start against Houston. When do you think about, we have better options, we're not tied to this guy, we're not no loyalty to Dustin May right now. When do you, not pull the plug, but change the role?
I think they gave up such a like, and James Tibbs is James Tibbs. First round pick. I'm not saying he's like a top 50 prospect in the sport or anything. It's not like they gave up Peyton Tolley to get Dustin May or whatever, but they did give up a good prospect to get the guy. I think you have to ride that. You have to ride it out. I don't like, he'd have to be pretty fucking bad for me to yank him. And I know that they're going to try to tweak around with him too. So it's not like they're just rolling out the same thing and expecting a different result. Like they're going to keep working with the guy. But I think just because of what you gave up, like they, and not beyond, they obviously saw something in him to give up James Tibbs. But like, I genuinely don't think you can give up that much to get a guy and yank him from the rotation like before like a month or a month and a half.
I get the logic, but if he's not performing, I don't think you compound a bad decision with another bad decision and keep
it. Depends
him
on how bad he looks. Like yeah. if he's awful, like yeah.
He'd have to look
Gagne.
Awful.
If it's like Eric Gagne, like yeah, you got
Eric Gagne. Was he the last guy to wear number 83 before Bernardino? Anyway, dude, I hate how my brain works. But yeah, I'm with you. He Dustin May would have to be really, really bad for me personally to advocate for him to be out of the rotation at this point. I do think the Red Sox are going to stick with him for the reasons you listed. James Tibbs, not a great prospect, but a solid prospect. And in the context of you got him in the Devers trade. Yes, yeah, makes sense to keep riding that guy a few times. But still, if it gets to mid-September and he's thrown up 3 out of 4 bad starts. Kyle Harrison looked pretty good in his last start. Fits.
Well, I mean, I think they got to find ways to get a couple of those guys chances. Like Kyle Harrison specifically, I think they have to find a way. Like whether it's obviously Buehler, like it doesn't take a lot with this rotation. If you make a good start, you're good to go for a little bit. Like he's bought himself even a bad start coming up. Like he's not going to get, like he bought himself that $500,000 incentive. If everyone pitches okay, like obviously you're not going to have confidence in Buehler and May off of like a couple of good starts. That's where you go to like maybe the skip the guy and fit him in. I don't know. I just, you got the guy, you believe in the guy. He's pitched well in AAA. You have to, you owe it to yourself to see if he can be a factor for you in the postseason. And like, they've got time to do it. Like, it's not like the season's ending tomorrow. But they just have to find a way to do it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we're talking in big hypotheticals. If this happens, then what? But right now, it's kind of ride it out. I do like your idea of pushing someone back, regardless of who it is, just a day to one, get guys rest, but two, get guys opportunities. Who that is? There's a variety of options, but that's a good. I like that. I'm with you on that.
Yeah, and they're gonna find a way. I don't know. Like, because it's not going to just be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 the rest of the way. But we'll see what they do. I just realized right now that the Red Sox have lost 3 out of 4 games, and we haven't given like any vibe check statements about where we're at with the team. I know there's going to be a lot of people listening to this show and people who have watched the last few games that think, oh, here we go. They've lost 3 out of 4. Like the second we bought in, they swept the Astros, and they lost the last game to the Royals, and then they beat the shit out of the Padres, but then they lost the last two games of the series. They've lost 3 out of 4. Are you worried? Like, there's going to be a lot of people that are freaking out right now. Are you worried?
Oh, no. They beat the Royals 2 out of 3, and then they lost 2 out of 3 on the road to a really good Padres team. Wait, what? People freak out. This is like the same thing I was talking about after we recorded when they beat the Royals. They played the Cubs and the Phillies coming out of the All-Star break, and people are like, well, they lost. That's 2 and 4 in their first two series. You really learn a lot about that. Like, come on, man. They play so many games in a year. You're not going to... crazy if you're changing your vibe after this series. It's the Padres. They're really good. There's no shame. Yeah. And then it gets swept. If they got swept and it was like that Blue Jays-Rockies series where they got pummeled every single night and you're just disgusted. Sure. Then I'm a little concerned. But this was 3 competitive games. They won 1, lost 2. It sucks, but it happens.
Yeah, that's where I'm at too. Like, that's why I didn't even, like, it didn't even occur to me to go to the vibe check. But I just like realized they've lost 3 out of 4, and I'm sure there's people freaking out. But yeah, I'm right there with you. It's like, this team has earned the respect to not have people jumping off ship after one bad series. Because that's really what it was. They swept the Astros. They took 2 out of 3 from the Royals. And now maybe the best team in baseball, top 2 or 3 team in baseball, wherever you want to put them. Yeah, the Sox lost that series. And yeah, maybe the gap between the AL and the NL, or the NL and the AL, is pretty steep. Because yeah, like they look different against the Cubs and the Phillies and the Padres than they do against any of the teams you want to consider the best teams in the AL. So maybe there's a gap there. But I still think the Red Sox are just as good as anybody in the American League. And just because they could have easily won 2 out of 3 in the series if they'd scored a couple of runs in that second inning, or if Cora pulled Giolito when he probably should have. We could be sitting here after a loss, but they win 2 out of 3, and it's like, hey, they still took 2 out of 3 from a great team. So yeah, nobody should be jumping ship right now. I don't know if people are doing that, but I know Red Sox fans. I know the last few years have made us a very antsy fan base and a very paranoid fan base. So I know people are doing it, but I'm here to tell you shouldn't.
Yeah, it's fine. Like I said, they lost a close series to a really good team on the road. Whatever. I was annoyed too, especially that middle game. That middle game was so frustrating. The comeback in the 9th inning, Roman Anthony, just unbelievable. He's only 19 years old, just like Jason Tatum. I tweeted that and people thought I was serious. I'm like, come on.
I saw the comments on that. Yeah, people thought you were serious.
It's a joke. Of course he's 21 years old, but great comeback. Great comeback. Fall short. Frustrating. The last game of the series, you just got outplayed and you ran into a really good pitcher in Dylan Cease. Whatever. It happens. But one thing we didn't mention. Cora's comments on Giolito. Quickly touch on that?
Yeah, please.
So you want to lay out the scenario?
So yeah, the scenario, we briefly touched on it, but maybe should talk about it a little bit more. So Giolito not looking good the entire game, and he had walked 2 batters in a row, and Ryan O'Hearn is coming up to the plate, left-handed batter with 2 outs in the inning. Giolito not really looking like himself. And I believe he had just walked Xander to load the bases. And it's like, okay, this is where you go to a lefty. They didn't have anyone up. Like I don't know if this was an issue of he just forgot to get somebody up earlier, or if he was maybe his post-game comments were the truth. But yeah, Giolito ends up walking O'Hearn, game tying run, and then whoever was up next, he walks in the go ahead run, and then they pull Giolito after walking 4 in a row. Cora asked about Giolito after the game, wasn't even directly asked about the decision to not pull him, but touched on it and basically said, yeah, we need to trust this guy to give us 5 innings or 100 pitches, and it just didn't work today. So to me, I thought that was just kind of a cop-out answer because he knows that he should have pulled him and didn't really have an explanation as to why. That's how I came away from it. I don't know. What did you think?
I just don't get what the relevance is of 5 innings or 100 pitches. Why is that? Why does that take priority over getting your pitcher out when he's drenched in sweat and clearly struggling, doesn't have it that day? You might be right. Might be him.
Yeah, that's why I don't think it does. Like what you're saying right there, it's like it doesn't make any sense.
Okay, if that was the truth and he's not coping, is it the Red Sox going, look, we'd like our chances to make the playoffs this year, but we want to get into a routine where it is expected that you pitch 5 innings or at least go 100 pitches before we pull you from the game? That's what we want to instill in our rotation. And even if you're struggling, we still expect that from you. That's the reach take that I got to explain what Cora said. But I'm more with you, Gordo. I think it was kind of like, yeah, you fucked up. Just say you fucked up. It's fine. Like even Alex Cora, who we all think is a great manager, he's not perfect.
All right. I'll give you an example of a time where he didn't adhere to this standard with Lucas Giolito. Against the Phillies, the third game against the Phillies, Giolito went 4 innings, 5 runs. They pulled him at 57 pitches because the situation called for it, because he didn't have it that day. And they ended up winning that game 9-8 in the 11th inning. Like, that was one of the great games of the season. Like, to me, like this, it's just like with the Vlad Jr. When we freaked out on this podcast when he didn't intentionally walk Vlad Jr. And Cora came out in the media the next day and he gave like a kind of a weird, like, yeah, I did it because of this answer. And it's like, okay, kind of feels like a, you're just kind of saying something to get through the question instead of just saying, like, I probably should have done it. Joe?
Do you guys feel like that Cora is a little too stubborn to admit his own mistakes? I mean, I'm just throwing it out there. Like, I would sort of lean towards no, but like you just referenced, this is the second time that it's a pretty obvious decision he should have made, and he's not just saying, yeah, I messed up on it.
Well, first, to his credit, there aren't a lot of obvious decisions that he fucks up.
Like, of course,
There's a reason that this is the second time it's happening all year, and it's such like a big talking point. Obviously, there's a lot of 50-50 calls, or maybe it's like 60-40, and he goes with the 40, and it doesn't work. Like, by all means, like, go explain your piece here. This is the second time it's happened. Joe, to your question, I would probably rather, like, we want our players to be accountable when they mess up. Like, I'd rather he admit a mistake when it's made, personally.
I'm trying to think. Does it behoove anyone for Cora to publicly say, hey, I messed up? Does that help anyone other than us content creators? Does it help anyone?
Or, helps Giolito.
Well, hold on. Or is it better he says what he says and then he speaks to Giolito, hey, man, look, I probably should have pulled you. Sorry I left you out there in a bad situation. You've had a great season. Not your night. Happens. My fault for not getting out there sooner. Like, what do I prefer? What do I prefer? Because, and he could also say to Giolito, I gave the media a nothing answer and told them we want 5 innings, 100 pitches, whatever. So don't worry about that. Like, which scenario do I like more? Granted, I really don't care about either. I don't think either is super important. But if I had to choose, I kind of like the accountability. I think that sets a good tone for the locker room. I think it sets a good tone just in general around the Red Sox. Hey, we're accountable here. When we fuck up, we say we fucked up. It's not the worst thing, but at the same time, like, if the culture of that clubhouse is, hey, we don't tell the media much. We talk about this stuff behind closed doors. Nah, I get that too. It's just, it's hard for me to give Cora the out when I really don't like the answer he gave.
Joe?
Well, I was going to ask on that point, Giolito's comments, like, I would assume for the clubhouse had to ring. That had to send some really good vibes if Giolito's saying, yeah, I didn't get the L on that one.
He was accountable.
But I probably should. Like, how many guys in that clubhouse do you think are saying, wow, he really stood up for us and really took ownership of that, even though he factored in, but it's not there on the score sheet. Like, I think that's huge for everyone else.
Well, I'm sure they appreciate it. I appreciate when, like, because Walker Buehler was doing it a bunch earlier this year where he would stink up the joint and be like, yeah, I'm fighting for my spot in this game. And it's like, yes, if you mess up and you, in this city, in Boston, I can't, because Sammy, you ask, like, what does it do? And to your point, like, I can't exactly tell you what it does, but in this town, people expect accountability when guys mess up, which is why when Walker Buehler was pitching poorly and admitting it, I appreciated it. When Giolito walks six guys in a game, he says, like, hey, I was terrible, and I know I didn't get the loss, but I probably deserve it. Like, I appreciate that. Yeah, like, for the wins and losses of the team, Cora going in the media and saying what he said doesn't change anything. So, like, it's up to the beholder whether you care about it or not. But personally, like, if I'm going to expect accountability from the players, I'm going to expect it from the manager too. Maybe he believed what he said, but I thought it was the wrong decision. And if it was an error on his part to not get the guy up, I would have appreciated him just saying, like, yeah, I probably should have had Steven Matz up a little bit earlier than I did. And you can leave it at that.
Yeah. And if you're listening, I can confirm Gordo in the moment did not like that decision. He made it loud and clear in the Playtesi chat.
So what are we?
He was like, what are we doing? Get him out of there. But hey, long season.
Not great.
Yeah. So, I mean, it is what it is. It's not something that happens all the time. Like, people will go on Twitter after something like this, and it's fire Cora. Like, I still think Alex Cora is one of the best managers in baseball.
Yeah.
I just thought this was a decision that rightfully is getting second guessed.
And then when you ask, who are you going to replace him with? They always go, Jason Veritek. There you go. He's already in the friggin' dugout.
Yeah. Before we go to Enough Said, I want to point out something that we talked about before it happened, And it's kind of happening as maybe not as we would have predicted, because I would have hoped that we would have higher hopes for what this guy would do, even with given the adversity. But when Seydon Rafaela got moved to second base, all three of, like, you, me, and Pat, we all on the radio, on the podcast, we expressed concern for what is this going to do. You got a guy who's red fucking hot at the plate and is the best defensive center fielder in baseball, and now you're moving him to second base. Since then, we've all admitted probably this is the right thing you have to do. So I'm not saying they shouldn't do this, but this is where it's at since the All-Star break, which he kind of got he was started getting moved in there before the All-Star break, but it's really been more permanent since when Meyer went down. But since the All-Star break, he's 16 for 82, no homers, 474 OPS. I don't know whether you want to say, oh, the All-Star break was a big gap and that kind of cooled off his hot streak and he just hasn't gotten going again. I don't know if you want to say, well, now he's playing second base and moving positions has hurt his offense, as it's done with a lot of guys. But that's something I'm keeping an eye on. There's not really any way that you can resolve it, because I guess the only way you could change it is play him in the outfield and start rotating Duran and Anthony at DH, and you bench Yoshida, which would make David Hamilton and Romy Gonzalez your platoon second base, or you could call Christian Campbell up. That might be the move. I may just solve the world's problems right there. Call Campbell up. He's your first baseman, and then you platoon Hamilton and Romy at second, and Yoshida gets benched.
Hey, I'm cool with Yoshida being benched. I agree. We've come around saying, all right, yeah, we don't like Seydon at second base, even though he can handle it fine defensively. We like him in center field. That's where his value is. I don't really subscribe to thinking that him playing second is contributing to him struggling hitting. I think he's just a streaky hitter. He slumped when he was playing center field as well. And I know he had the hot streak, and the timing makes it look like there's a connection between those two things. But I think this is just who he is. He's going to go hot and cold. He's never going to be an outstanding hitter. Like we've been saying all year, if he's an average bat, plays great defense, moves around a little bit, steals bases, a little bit of pop, clutch, we'll be happy with it. It is frustrating. I get people saying, move him back to center. That's why he's not hitting. I just don't think that's the case. I think that this is who he is. And the logic behind it, like what you think, like he only has a certain amount of time and now he's dedicating this amount of time to practicing second base. I just don't think it's like that. I think he's a freak of nature defensively. You put him wherever and he goes, yes, I will play defense there. And the hitting is the hitting. So he'll probably heat up again in September and we'll go, oh, he's back. Then he'll cool off and heat up. It's just who he is.
I do think he's not incapable of heating up again as a second baseman. But to me, it's like these guys are such routine-oriented creatures, baseball players specifically, athletes in general, but specifically baseball players. So to mess with a guy's routine when he's the hottest he's ever been in his career, to me, and I get when Meyer went down, you had to, but they were doing this before Meyer went down. So
I blame the All-Star break. I like what Giolito said. Too. You see what he said? He was like, get rid of the All-Star break.
Yeah. No, let's give us like a 180 game season. No All-Star break, and we start at March 10th.
180 game season. Everyone's elbow is gonna be made of pulled pork.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it just if you can keep it together, you're just that much more valuable. Dylan Cease never gets hurt, so maybe he makes even more money.
Yeah, well, neither did Lucas Giolito before he did.
Can happen to anybody. Joe.
Can we also bring up one thing before we get to enough said? Yes. This kind of, I mean, I think it was the talk, at least from game two. David Hamilton's awful bunting.
True.
Oh. And I mean it, awful. Awful. Dude. Awful. And if you listen to Alex Cora in the pregame talking to Fleming of game three, he said that it's going to be sort of a philosophy change. So guys are going to be bunting a little bit more. He said, like, yeah, we're going to have to maybe practice bunting a little bit more. And honestly, I stand up and applaud and be like, finally, thank you for incorporating the short game. It's been a long time coming. And I think the first guy in the box who needs to be there for about an hour is David Hamilton.
Here's the thing I'll say, because it is crazy that he was trying to bunt for a hit there. Like, obviously, yes, he didn't get the bunt down and like that sucks, but he's running out of the box with the bat still out there. And like, yes, that is on David Hamilton for not knowing the situation there. Or I mean, he knows the situation, but for not understanding that, like, hey, this has to be the priority here. But it's also, I mean, Like, how is this not talked about?
Everyone. It's on everyone.
It is on. Yeah, it's on. Dude, everybody.
Can I? Joe, I'm glad you brought this up. I might have taken that experience out of my head because I had almost forgotten about it until Joe brought it up. So thank you, Joe. If I were to have a ball of clay and say, I'm going to mold this ball of clay into a
Where
baseball
the hell
player.
Is this going?
He's going to be a light hitting middle infielder, left-handed, who has incredible speed. You'd be like, oh, okay, so this guy knows how to bunt, right? That's the most obvious trait you would give a guy like that. Yeah, I know bunting's not as in vogue as it used to be, but come on, the guy you just described, that beautiful ball of clay that you've just molded, he's got to learn how to bunt. I don't mind him trying to bunt for a hit the first time. Not my preference, but I don't hate it. It's the other two times. Just get the bunt down. That was stuff like that. Stuff like that. Losing games happens all the time. Long season. Stuff like that is what makes my head want to friggin' explode. My hair catches on fire and I'm no longer emo. Now I'm bald because my hair all burnt off. That was so unbelievably bad and so poorly executed. I don't even know where to begin where it comes to who to blame for that. And it seems like a small thing in the grand scheme, but that might have cost you a game, which might have cost you the series. Very frustrating.
Here's what I'll say about, and the reason I think it didn't ring as deep in my head, because it was inexcusable, and it's such a simple thing that, like, a guy like David Hamilton, like, you got to know these are your spots. So obviously on him, on everybody, never a problem that should never be discussed. But he didn't get the bunt down. The next guy, Romy Gonzalez, shallow fly out, would not have gotten Story home. Next guy, I believe, was a ground out. So even if he does get the bunt down, and I get it, it could change. Like, anything can change if the guy's on third. That said, with what we saw happen, the run still wouldn't have scored. So to me, like, the not scoring in the second inning and the leaving Giolito out there were both far more significant in the Red Sox losing game two. That said, it's something that can't happen. And it's as inexplicable as any issue that happened in the series. That's probably more inexplicable than anything else that went wrong.
And then I get all the comments, people being like, you got to call it Vaughn Grissom. Like,
oh,
Vaughn
yeah, no,
Grissom?
I love Vaughn, but...
Yeah, same. What does he do better than David Hamilton? Have you seen the numbers in AAA on anything above 92 miles an hour? He can't touch it. Can't play defense. Can't run. What are we... Ground balls galore. Like, good guy. Please, spare
me. We like Vaughn.
Sogard. Call up Sogard or Eaton. Vaughn Grissom? Jesus.
I got a couple saying call up Campbell for that role, or call up Campbell. And
sure.
I can't, Christian Campbell, I want called up soon at some point, because I think he's at the point where, like, what else are you waiting for? But to play the David Hamilton role, no.
No.
Like,
yeah,
if he's getting called up, he has to play. Christian Campbell is not a defensive replacement.
No.
And he's not, like, he can move, but he's not a pinch runner.
If you want Campbell to come up to take Hamilton's roster spot, sure, but the role is going to be entirely different.
Yeah, you got to play. Got to play.
Got to play ball.
Got to play. Got to play. And you know what? At some point, that could happen. He could get called up for Hamilton, but if he does, he's going to be playing. It's
home
not
run,
going to be...
Home run today? Yeah, home run today as we record on
beautiful
Sunday.
Beautiful home run.
To left field.
Pulled it in the air, and he pimped it a little bit, looked confident.
We spoke to him. That's the goal. Pull the ball in the air. Ted Williams. Just be Ted Williams, dude.
Yep, that's all he's got to be.
Easy.
That's how you live up to the extension. Just be Ted Williams.
Easy.
All right, Sam, you want to do Enough Said before we get out of here?
Yes, sir. I know exactly where I'm going with this. I have been all aboard the Peyton Tolley train since it left the station. Today, on August 10th, he made his AAA debut. And you might look at the numbers and go, oh my God, he got rocked. He stunk. I don't think so. That's not really how it works when you're looking at minor league numbers. He did not have a good first inning. Two home runs, grand slam, one of them. However, if you watch the game, he had clean inning going. Ground ball, double play, got booted by Mikey Romero, and that just led to a disaster. And then after that first inning, nothing. Absolutely nothing. Didn't get touched. His final line, 5 innings, 7 hits, 6 runs, 5 earned. Not great. 1 walk, 3 Ks. So and 72 pitches, 53 strikes, which is nice. So I would call it a positive start. Stat line's bad, of course, but when you're analyzing a young player like that, the way I look at it is he had one bad inning and then followed it up with four really good innings. That's a win. I'm excited about this kid still. I think they're going to start ramping down his pitch total and his inning total, prep him for a brief role in the bullpen in 2025, and I still think we're going to see him up in the big leagues.
So, yeah, I mean, obviously, you look at what he did, it was up and down, but you look at what the fastball, through 20 of them, got 10 swing and misses on it, and this whatever Buffalo Bisons, I think they are, a lot of big league adjacent guys in that lineup, like guys who have been in the big leagues this year, swinging and missing at that fastball. And it's not like he's throwing 99 on the fastball. I know that they called it a sinker. I'm not sure it was at the very end, but he hit 97.7. Before that, he topped out at 96. So it's not like he's blowing you away with velocity, but if you watch the pitch, if you watch his fastball, like it darts in there. Like it's the shape of this thing. Sammy?
He threw a curveball too.
Yeah, you see that? That was new. Yeah,
that's like a new. I don't know if he tweaked the slider or what, but Ian Kundall was saying it as well. Like that's a pitch I haven't seen. So, and that's the big thing on Toley. Start of the season, big kid throws hard, fastball's good. Okay, we know that, but he didn't really have a secondary pitch. Now the slider is a plus pitch, and he has a changeup and a cutter to go with it. So that's why we're so high on Peyton Toley for people who are confused. Like, who is this kid? Is this? Wasn't that highly touted coming out of TCU, but if you've seen prospects, if you follow prospects, this is the kind of profile that people just salivate for. So I'm all the way in on Peyton Toley, and today actually made me feel better. I know people are going to roll their eyes. Oh, this stat line is not good. But like I said, one bad inning, four good innings. I'm totally fine with that performance.
Today, I mean, here's the thing. Peyton Toley's a left-handed pitcher. And like you watch the game, the fastball is elite. The slider at times looks good, and the changeup doesn't really look that good. He doesn't need all three to work to be an effective reliever. Like he can be a two-pitch guy, especially with the fastball he's got, and it works, even in the majors. The thing is, he's a left-handed pitcher, and the Red Sox have a lot of good lefties. Like they, when the rosters expand, like they could call him up and see, like, hey, if you're absolutely dominant, we'll give you that shot to make the postseason roster. But I do wonder, how necessary is it? I don't know. Like, maybe he could be absolutely dominant. I don't. It's just like, when is he going to get the chance to prove that with the other lefties that they've got? Like, they've got Justin Wilson, Steven Matz, Aroldis Chapman pitching in these high leverage spots. Like, when is Toley ever going to get that shot?
They might not be looking at it like that. They might be saying, this is the new crown jewel of our minor league system. We want to get him a major league rep in 2025 so that it's easier for him when he when he really makes it to the big leagues in 2026 and more of a full-time role. They might be looking at it like that.
Are you thinking as a starter?
No. This year?
Yeah.
No, bullpen. He's okay. For sure going to be a reliever.
No, I agree with that. And obviously there's like the reports of them soon, as you said, winding down what he's doing. But yeah, I mean, I guess there's some value in getting some big league experience. I guess you're not wrong there. But I feel like if you're doing it, the hope would be that you just like have this absolute weapon that you're going to throw and no one's going to know how to touch it. They've never seen it. And it's like, if you call him up in September, how much time does he truly have to work his way into that role? I don't know. I'm sure they have a plan because they called him up. Like the timing of it is not insignificant. Like obviously, there is a hope there.
And also the only confirmed like dead set, complete lock, absolute lock left-hander in the bullpen. Two of them, Chapman and Wilson, and Chapman's your closer. And I think Murph's been really good. Bernardino's
respect
been really good.
Steven Matz.
And we'd like Steven Matz. I wish we could have him for an interview sometime, but you know, there's only a few, two, in fact, complete dead set, 100% locks. And that's Chapman, who only pitches ninth inning sparingly in the eighth. And Justin Wilson. So I don't think it's out of the question. I feel good that we're going to see him. What the role's going to be, bullpen, to what extent, I'm not sure. I'm just saying, don't be surprised when Peyton Toley comes out of that Fenway bullpen.
Oh, yeah. I do think it's going to happen. But we will see.
Great mustache, by the way.
Great mustache.
Team stash.
And he told Bradfo he can smell that carrot, which means he knows it's coming. So, shout out Peyton Toley. We'll see what he does in the coming weeks.
Fenway smells like carrots.
Yeah, I questioned whether carrots smell like anything, but a guy with a farm called in and said that they do. So I tend to believe that guy, but.
Do you know that carrots help you maintain your vision?
I did know that. It's vitamin B, right?
Something like that. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Let's just go with that.
Oh
yeah.
My God. Who the hell?
Hey, Joe. Shut up,
Joe gets
up,
so
Joe.
Mad. Joe gets so mad shut when up, we go Joe. Off topic. All right. Go to your Nuff Said.
Joe, I have terrible eyesight. I need to eat more carrots. Okay. Here's my Nuff Said. Shout out Petco Park for their fun facts on Roman Anthony this weekend. Both of them came from his interview on Play Tessie, talking about how much he despises ketchup, which I love him for. Great take. I hate anything tomatoes, so get that shit out of here. Roman said, exterminated off the face of the earth. Couldn't agree more. And they another one was how much he loves The Town, like the movie, which obviously we ask every player about. So shout out Petco Park for doing that. And also shout out to the Padres for employing Don Orsillo. The opposite of a shout out for MLB TV for blacking out the opposing broadcast when – like, I can't watch the Padres broadcast when they're playing the Red Sox. It gets blacked out. So I can't listen to Don.
You would
call
do that? You would watch the Padres broadcast in favor just to hear Don?
Yeah, I would. I love Don.
Fuck, no, I would not do that. I like Don too, but like, fuck. Don's, I don't want to hear about the Padres for 3 hours.
It's Don, though.
I listened to Don for friggin' like 15 years of my life. He's great, but I don't want to hear about the Padres.
15 years ain't enough.
Just don't care enough about the pub. But I do love the Padres for using our fun fact. Whoever intern dug up that soundbite, you are a friend of the program. A friend of the program forever.
Yep. So shout out to that intern. Shout out for Don. Shout out to Don. Shout out to Xander, who I'll always love and miss, even if he's played pretty well. So maybe I miss him a little bit more now that he's playing better. But shout out to all of our Boston brethren that are all living in San Diego.
Do you not like marinara sauce either?
No, I don't.
That's crazy. Ketchup, gross. Fine. But marinara, it's fantastic.
Joe?
Yeah, you're a complete psycho guru. I do got to mention one. Nuff said, I mentioned this to you guys in the chat. But did you guys happen to see how Johnny Damon looked in the Yankees Legends game, which, by the way, Mariano Rivera tearing his Achilles
crazy
in that playing center field, but I'm just pulling it up right now. This is what Johnny Damon looks right now.
Sorry, Joe. It's like an encapsulation of the state of the Yankees right now. Like Johnny Damon comes up looking like he just got attacked by a swarm of bees, and then Mariano gets injured, and the whole thing is just everything with the Yankees is such a mess right now.
It really is a sad trombone. That but like, I mentioned this to you guys in the chat that if you are Johnny Damon's age, you should not be having hair that long because it just looks
Sammy.
It looks not. Really, really uh-oh, bad. Sammy. No, Sammy, you're at a good length right now.
Uh-oh, Sammy.
You're thank at a you good Joe. Length right
he's
now.
He's telling you can't grow it anymore, though.
I mean, in the winter, my hair is usually down to my shoulders, but Johnny Damon's was like down to his nips.
No, I'm saying past the shoulders.
But also, like, you know, I don't want to harp on his looks, which is funny because he was the hot guy on the 2004 Red Sox that all the ladies love, but... Man, that was a rough picture.
I had so many people send me that picture. I had like five different people.
I sent it. Text I sent it to my dad, and he goes, "What is that?"
We still love you, Johnny. We still love Johnny Damon.
Yeah, yeah, man. The naked pull ups that he did in 2004 in the clubhouse, allegedly, very cool.
Shout out Johnny Damon. But all right, let's wrap this thing up. Thanks for tuning in to episode 249 of Play Tessie. Remember, hit that subscribe button wherever you get your podcast, rate 5 stars, and then find us on WEI's YouTube channel. Subscribe to WEI there, find the Play Tessie playlist there. It's got all of our episodes, and you can hit the thumbs up on those videos, which we appreciate. And then find us and follow us on all of the socials at Play Tessie on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. For Sammy, for Joe producing, it's Gordo here for Play Tessie episode 249. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll have an interview coming for you next episode. Peace.